Greetings. Welcome to Mishnayim Mikra, our ongoing study of Parshat HaShavua, sponsored by the OU.org. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and I'm honored to be sharing with you observations in the various aliyot of Parshat Toldot. Today we'll be looking at the third aliyah, which begins in Perek Chaf Vav, Pasuk Yod Gimel. Yitzchak has just been very successful in the land of Pleshet, growing things. At the end of the previous podcast, I asked the question, how is it that Yitzchak is able to pass Rivka off as his sister when they've got two young lads with them? I didn't mention one possibility, which is that the lads were left back at home. Something to keep in mind, but we'll see in the next passage that that will not work either, probably. Vaygdal ha'ish. So now Yitzchak grew, and this means wealth. We'll see that this means wealth, but he continues to get greater until he becomes very great. So he had flock, cattle, lots of possessions. And the Plishtim, the locals, are jealous of him. This is a theme that becomes common and, in a sense, prefigures the Egypt experience, where Yosef, who was the outsider, comes in and becomes very successful. And clearly there's a lot of jealousy that takes place among the Mitzrim, who, as we will discuss in our analysis of Parshat Vayigash, note that the Yosef and his family is exempt from taxes and is getting a stipend from the government, while they have been sold into slavery. Same thing here, the local Plishtim are jealous of Yitzchak's success. V'chol ha-be'erot asher chafru avdei aviv b'mei Avraham aviv sitmum plishtim v'yamalum afar. This speaks to the heart of, if you will, of terrorism. All of the wells that were dug by Avraham's servants when Avraham was there, and that's after the episode with Sarah, when Avraham was given the opportunity to stay in Pleshet and did so for many years. The Plishtim sealed them up and filled them with dirt. Now, why would you go and fill up a well with dirt if not because you have such a hatred for the other that you'd rather have him not have dirt than have yourself have water, or have water to share? This, of course, speaks to a particular kind of evil. Vayomar Avimelech el Yitzchak, and now Avimelech turns to Yitzchak, and Avimelech seems to be pushed by the Plishti feeling, the feeling of his people. Lech me'imanu ki atzamtem menu miyod. You have to leave because you're more powerful than we are. He lays it out straight. He doesn't hide anything. He says, you have to leave. Vayelech misham Yitzchak leaves. He's not welcome, he leaves. So he goes to Nachal Grar, the ravine, or the wadi, as it were, of Grar, and he settles there. And so he's moving around within the Plishti area. He left the particular locale of Avimelech, but he goes to Nachal Grar. Vayashav Yitzchak v'achpor b'erot tamayim asher chafru me'avraham aviv v'satmum plishti v'achremot Avraham. So we now reference those wells that we saw in Pasuk Tetvav, in verse 15, we now reference them and say, now Yitzchak goes and redigs them, gets all the dirt out of the way, has them dug, and he calls them by name, by the same name that his father gave them. Now this is a very telling Pasuk, because first of all, we see something that may shed a little light into the Plishti behavior that is not so awful. Because we see that the Plishtim filled them in acharemot Avraham, after Avraham's death. This may mean really after Avram's death. It may also mean after Avram's departure, and that they had kept them open in his honor once he was gone, so they sealed them up. But in any case, and I'm going to go back to that second possibility, Achrimot Avraham may really be a reference to after Avram left the Plishti area, and then he called these wells by the same name that his father called them. In other words, Yitzchak is now actively demonstrating the notion of continuity of the legacy of his father, something that we've already seen several times in the text, specifically in the famine and his desire to go down to Egypt, as I mentioned in the first podcast of the series. And so he's continuing this direction. Parenthetically, there is an absolutely fascinating and beautiful comment of the Ramban on these psukim about the wells that is very worth looking at. Of course, there is no Ramban that's not worth looking at, but this is really, really something, in which he talks about each of the avot as representing, foreshadowing a particular epoch in Jewish history, and that Yitzchak's life represents and corresponds to the epoch of the time that we were in Israel, and that the Be'erot are representative of the Batei Mikdash. And he plays as follows. So not only did he redig the wells that his father had dug, or he opened them and gave them the same names, but they also found a well of living water, of spring water. So after they dug and found it, the local shepherds fought with Yitzchak's shepherds to say, we have the water. And this, of course, is again repeating, if you will, the events of Avraham's life, where Avraham's shepherds and Lot's shepherds had the dispute. But things played very differently there. Avraham and Lot are able to separate. Neither one of them live there. In this case, Yitzchak is the outsider, and the Roei Gerar live there. So they referred to the bear as Esek, meaning something like oppression difficult dealings, because in working in this bear left us with a bad taste that we had to have these difficult dealings. The sense is that they left this bear and left it to the locals. They dug another well. There was a fight about them. Sitna is an accusation. So the Ramban says this corresponds to the second Mikdash. Look at the Ramban. It's beautiful. He moved away from there and dug a third well. This one they didn't fight about. Which means now he had found some area that he could have to himself. What did he call the area? Rechavot. And of course the modern city in Israel, Rechavot, is named after this Pasuk. What was his explanation for the name? Now God has given us a breath, and now we can multiply and grow in this land. Of course, what does that mean to become fruitful in this land when at the most he has two kids at this point, and that was a difficult issue of many years of childlessness? Unclear. As I mentioned, there are difficulties in the previous Aliyah which now become exacerbated, and that is as follows. Where are Esav and Yaakov in this entire chapter? They're nowhere to be found. Truth to tell, we will meet up again with Esav at the end of the chapter, but remember, the chapter divisions are not ours. And within the context of a Parashat Mesorah, which ends after verse 33, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, throughout this entire parak, Esav and Yaakov are not mentioned. And Yitzchak seems to be operating as a single man, or a married man, but with no children. He's able to represent his wife as a sister, with no children. He works alone, and now in the Aliyah that we just read, he has constant battles with Avimelech, with the Plishtim, with the Ro'im, constant difficulties, constant challenges, and nowhere are his sons to be found. And the real glaring omission is really Esav, because what do we know about Esav? Well, we know that Esav is a hunter. We know that Esav is somebody, as we learn later, who has quite a temper. We also know that Esav, and just from the text, besides the Midrashim that talk about how bloody he is, etc., and we also know that Esav has a great love, filial devotion to his father. So you can imagine, it's very hard to picture that Esav sees his father being pushed around by the Ro'im, and that Esav sees his father having difficulties every time he digs a well and doesn't step in and take action. What are we to make of this omission? So I'd like to suggest the following as a way to read this. We are familiar with the principle that most Rishonim, most of the early commentators, adopted to one measure or another. The one who was most reluctant to adopt it, but had to in certain places, was Ein Muktam U'Mochar BaTorah, which means the Torah's sequence is not only driven by chronological fidelity, meaning you could have one story following another where really the earlier story happened later. The one place in the Torah when there's just no denying this is the beginning of Bamidbar, where the first chapter of Bamidbar is presented as the beginning of the second month, and the ninth chapter is the beginning of the first month, a month earlier. And it's sort of clearly the same year. So there's no way to play with that one. However, the question is how much we utilize this principle as part of our Parshanut. And there we have the famous Machlok at the Ramban, Ibn Ezra, look at the Ramban at the beginning of Parshat Yitro, who goes at length about the issue of Muktam Mukhar BaTorah and really sticks to the fidelity. But again, most Rishonim are very comfortable with the notion that in Muktam Mukhar BaTorah, and that there will be other considerations that will determine the sequence. I would like to suggest for a moment that chapter Chavav, meaning chapter 26, meaning up until Pasuk Lamed Gimel, from Aleph Lamed Gimel, those 33 Pasukim, are psukim that describe what happened during the 20 years when Yitzchak had married Rivka, but they had not yet had kids. Now take a look as follows. There's a famine. Yitzchak goes down with Rivka. She's attractive. He goes down just like his father with his unmarried, with his his wife who has no children. She's very attractive. He says she's a sister, etc. He then, it's uncovered because Avimelech sees him sporting with her, whatever that may mean. He then goes into business. He has slaves because he's wealthy. He moves around the area having difficulties with the people who are there. And then, as we'll see later on, he moves back to Beersheb, and Avimelech comes to him and makes a brit with him. And then his servants at the end of this piece, we'll see this in the next podcast, come up to him and tell him that they found another well, and that's Beersheba. All right, very nice. In the meantime, this is all during the 20 years. Now, afterwards, Esav is born, Yaakov is born, and then that story was, of course, presented in the previous chapter. Why it's in that sequence, I'll share in a moment. Pasuk Lamed Dal Lamed Hey, pick up where that story left off. So in other words, to read it properly, we'd go back to Chafei and say, Yitzchak is the son of Avraham, and Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka. And then we have this whole chapter going all the way to Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Then we flip back and read, and then after 20 years, they had children, the children grew up, here's how they grew up, Esav is a hunter, Yaakov is a tent dweller, whatever that may mean, Ohalei Torah, Ohalei Miknet, and this is how they grew up, the Mechirat HaBechorah, and then the next thing that we hear is that Esav is 40 years old, and he has these wives, and the wives are not pleasing to Rivka and Yitzchak, and the very next scene, which we're going to see in the next podcast, is the famous scene of the request for the blessing, request for the venison to be able to give Esav the blessing, which leads, of course, to a very grand and very trembling sort of moment of Jewish history. The question, of course, would be, why would the text present itself out of order? So we have to go back to the end of Barshel Chayisara to figure this out. At the end of Chayisara, where we seal off Avram's life, even though, again, Avram's alive during this entire narrative, because Avram's alive until the boys are 15, based on the chronology. Nonetheless, we finish Avram's life, we say how long Avram lived, we say where he was buried, etc. The next piece is Toldot Yishmael. Toldot Yishmael is very critical because the blessing to Avram is that your seed will be like the stars in the sky, etc. We have to hear that that was fulfilled through Yishmael. So we hear all about Yishmael. Now imagine this, we're reading about it, and we say, Avram has two major sons. Whatever we to make of Bnei Keturah, Avram has Yitzchak and Yishmael. And Yishmael, who is presented as the second-rate son, the one who's also going to get a bracha, has this wonderful bracha. In the meantime, Yitzchak, nothing. So the text juxtaposes the birth of Yaakov and Esav to the Toldot of Yishmael to see that the bracha also happened through Yitzchak, and Yitzchak also has children. It might have taken 20 years, it might be only two kids, but nonetheless, that's where it starts. Once we've gotten that story and we get the fulfillment of the prophecy, as I mentioned in the first podcast, of the two will separate from birth and will tussle with each other and one will overcome the other, partially which is fulfilled when Yaakov buys the Bechorah, Rav Yavod Sayir, then we go back and fill in the rest of the Yitzchak biography of the missing 20 years. And that's fairly where we've gotten up to. We have to yet read a little bit more of Perek Chavav in the next Aliyah, to finish that piece of the puzzle. We will pick that up in the next podcast. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.